Good morning. Today's daf in Tanya's daf Chof Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf of Bilan Lasech and Nishmas Lois Lupin Zoltman. We are on Chof Aleph Amud Beis. We are towards the top of the Amud. We are right now in the middle of a dialogue between the Reb Nachmans. Just to get us back into where we are, we're in the third parak of Tanya's. Third parak of Tanya's talks about other calamities that deserve our attention, our immediate attention, as opposed to the lack of rain. It doesn't deserve our immediate attention. It kind of gradually builds up. As rain does not come down, so we realize, a little bit slower in process, but we realize that the situation is turning grave. We are now in the third parak of the Masechta, and the third parak of the Masechta dedicates its attention to situations, calamities, catastrophes, where it is clear that the situation is grave immediately. So the mission that we did on Daf Yetes goes through different various scenarios, and where we know for sure that this is something that deserves our immediate attention. When I say immediate attention, I mean by that, we blow shofar and we fast, meaning it's kind of like the last seven of the series of rain. We go into a full-blown time of Tzibor. The Gemara has been, since the Mishnah, going... Huh? Yeah, in other words, all the restrictions, with everything that was discussed in the Mishnah in the second term. Okay, included in this is walls that are falling down. So the Gemara says that if you have collapsed buildings is a result of our immediate attention. As long as we were discussing collapsed buildings, so the Gemara then segued into a number of episodes and incidents that relate to collapsed buildings. We spoke in yesterday's daf the story of Ilf and Rav Yochanan regarding the two of them sitting by a collapsed wall. The Malachim said, let's push the wall on them, and the Malachim said, no one of them is going to turn into a Rosh Yeshiva. And to make a slightly longer story shorter, Rav Yochanan turned into the Rosh Yeshiva. The Gemara then went on to discuss Nachum Ishkamzu. We spoke yesterday of the story of Nachum Ishkamzu and the dirt that he brought to the Caesar. And then we spoke yesterday about a plague affects the city, so then that also is one of those things that deserve our immediate attention. What is the definition of a plague? So the Mishnah was very clear numerically, what is the definition of a plague? So we have a city of a population of 500. In the city of population of 500, so three people are dying on three consecutive days. And so the ratio of 3 to 500. And it has to be three specifically dying on three consecutive days. Anything other than that, any other permutation is not considered, does not fall under the category of debtor. Okay, that's what we learned yesterday. And we were discussing that. We should go right to the top of Chafav on the days where I'll go straight back to the very top. And we'll go to the city of Drokaras. Probably mispronounced, but you'll forgive me. Drokaras here on Mosiah Chamesh Meos Ragli. So Drokaras was a city of 500 people. Now, three people die in the city of Drokaras on one day. Okay, so that's not the definition of debtor. Obviously, that's not good. That's a tragedy, but it doesn't qualify as debtor. Rav Nachman said, okay, Thomas, right? It warrants a fast. So I'm Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, come on, to Rabbi Meir. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, there are two Rav Nachmans in this episode. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, well, why? What? What are you doing? You're going like Rabbi Meir. So you possibly like Rav Meir. As I explained yesterday, just quickly reiterate, Rav Meir is of the opinion that, well, first, before we get to Rav Meir, we know that the Torah says that when an ox is damaged, so the first, second time that it does damage, it's a tam, meaning it's not usual, it's not habitual for it to gore another person. And so, therefore, the owner of the ox only has to pay chassi nezek, only has to pay half damages. However, once it becomes a muad, so then the expectation is that it does do the damage, and the owner has the burden of full liability, and that's nezek shalem. What makes an ox go from a chassi, from a tam to a muad? So three negichos. There has to be three gorings. Three gorings on three consecutive, not consecutive, but three gorings on three different days. Okay, that's what makes an animal a tam into a muad. Right? What if it gores three times on one day? So so one opinion in the Gemara and Baba Kama is that's not enough. It has to do it on three different days. Rabbi Meir's argument is kol shekein, meaning let's think logically. If it gores three times on three different days, it turns into a muat. So Rameir says, logically, if it gores three times on one day, it's also going to be a muat. That's the opinion of Rav Meir. Okay, now, is his opinion accepted or not? Debatable. But what the Gemara now is saying over here is that were you employing the same type of argument to say that if three people die in three consecutive days, that's dever. If three people die in one day, using Rav Meir's argument, that's also dever. That's what the Gemara, that's what Rav Nachman bar Rav Chista seems to be arguing. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, okay, but that's a Rav Meir argument. And we don't necessarily subscribe to the Rav Meir argument. Okay, that's the that was the give and take. Okay, we don't have more on this particular issue. Meaning the Gemara doesn't seem to conclude who was right on this issue. There were two positions. Okay, we go on in the Gemara. Amle Rav Nachman Rav Chisol Rav Nachman Yitzchak Leikamar Leifalagaban. So Rav Nachman Rav Chisol extends an invitation to Rav Nachman Yitzchak and says to him, you should come to us. Meaning you're clearly Talmid Chacham. You clearly understand how Torah works. You have mastery over it. You should join us. So his answer is, quoting a Braisa, quoting Rabbi Yossi, the place doesn't make the man makes the place. Shekema Sina Bahar Sinai. The Gemara is going to give a number of examples of this idea that it doesn't matter where you live. In other words, you make the place. So one example of this would be Har Sinai. She calls Manshe Shechina Shuriya Allah Amar Torah. Okay, when the Shekhinah is on Har Sinai, so Har Sinai is untouched, it's restricted area, meaning it's the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, is on Har Sinai. No one can go beyond the border. A perimeter was created around Har Sinai. No one can encroach on that perimeter. Okay. And then meanwhile, they stop the Shekhinah, but once the Shekhinah goes away, After the shofar blast, meaning and the Shekhinah is gone, so now if you want to go on Har Sinai, go ahead, go on Har Sinai. There's nothing intrinsically holy about Har Sinai. It's only holy while the Shekhinah is on it. You know, the minhag is to blow shofar at the end of Yom Kippur. One of the ideas, it's a minhag. One of the ideas behind the minhag of blowing shofar at the end of Yom Kippur is basically this idea that the day is over, the Kiddush is over. Okay, I don't exactly know what it means to climb on the mountain, but in other words, that's it. In other words, Kedusha is gone. So, and we get that idea from Har Sinai. Once you blow in the shofar, so that's it, the Kedusha is gone, the Shekhinah is gone. Anyway, so that's one idea where, one example where we see that the Kedusha Samakam is a function of, I'd say in this case a person, it's not a person, but it's a function of the Shekhinah. A second example, the Chemes in Baal Mo Shebe Midbar. She calls Manchu Natu Amra Tarvi Shlechum in a machana called Sarua. When the Mishkan is set down and everything is in order and all the curtains are in order and the tabernacle is set up, so now Mesora, Azov, anyone who's Tame cannot be in that area because that area has Kedusha. Meanwhile, Huglala HaParoches, when the curtains are wrapped up, meaning when they're about to travel, and so they wrap everything up, they pack everything away, who's through Zav and Mitzor and the Kadosham? So then a Zav and Mitzor can walk in there, meaning doesn't that place have Kedusha? The answer is no, because it's not the Makom that has Kedusha, it's the Shekhinah that's there that has Kedusha. So those are two examples, and basically Rav Nachman Yitzchak's point is, look, there's nothing special about your place, my hometown is just as good for me. It's not the place that makes the man, it's the man that makes the place. So Amrli Yachi Nekaman Olagabe Mar. So Rav Nachman Baruch Chisda says to Rav Nachman Yitzchak, okay, I'm coming to you. Meaning, fine, you don't want to come here, you want to stay in your small out-of-town location, right? That's fine. So, but in other words, I clearly want to be with you, I'm going to learn with you, so I'm going to pack myself up and I'm going to go to you. So Amrli Mutav Yavo Mana Ben Pras, Eitzo Mana Ben Mana. V'ayavo Mana Ben Mana, Eitzo Mana Ben Pras. I'll translate it literally, and then I'll explain what it means. Right, 100 son of 100 should not be going to 100 son of 50. 100 son of 50 should be going 100 son of 100. What is that? I just translated literally. What does that mean? Rashi explains. You can see Rashi inside. Rashi's, as you move towards the bottom of the Amud, it's the last two short lines. Chatz Yamana Veloshem Prusikim Opras Prisas Machusecha. Sha'aviv Shal Rav Nachman Barvichisa Gadol Miyitchas Aviv Shal Rav Nachman. Of the two Rav Nachmans, Rav Nachman Bar Rav Chista, Rav Nachman, son of Rav Chista, his father was greater than Rav Nachman, who was son of Yitzchak. How do we know that? Rashi says that's easy. Midimitakari Bar Rav Chista, the eater of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, because it's just very easy. Look for whose father was the Rav. Rav Nachman, son of Rav Chista, his father was a Rav, hence Rav Chista. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, his father was not a Rav. Mechlal Shalo Nismach. In other words, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's father did not get smicha, otherwise he would have got called up to the Torah as Rav Nachman Bar Rav Yitzchak, and he's just simply Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So basically, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, look, I may be, whatever, however you understand, I'm great in learning, however it is, but in other words, but you have Yichus. So you have Yichus, I don't have as much Yichus, so it's not appropriate that you should be coming to me. Okay, so that's the end of the dialogue between the Rav Nachmans. And again, the reason why the Gemara had this dialogue over here is because it was a question of whether or not three people dying in one day is considered Dever, is not considered Dever. And the Rav Nachmans debated it. Sounds like from the Gemara that Rav Nachman Yitzchak's position is the accepted one, which is that it's not considered Dever. It has to be that they die in three consecutive days, not on the same day. Bisur Hava Debarta, Bishivusa Derablo Hava Debarta. In the town of Surah, there was Dever. Or they had some sort of plague in Surah, but in the community of Rav, however, there wasn't Dever. Okay, now Rav was the head of Surah, so I guess it means that, in other words, like any big city, any big metropolis, so you have suburbs or, whatever, district, various districts, whatever. In the district of Rav, there was no Dever. So, So the people thought, okay, in other words, we have Rav. Rav protects us. Rav has Zechuyos, and we discussed this in yesterday's daf at length, and now we get to see it again in today's daf. Rav has Zechuyos, and therefore he protected us. So, Ischazel of the Chama, Rav didn't fish the Zechus the Tuva, Hamil Zuchel of the Rav. And then the Gemara had, somebody had a dream, and basically a dream is a communication with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the explanation was, for Rav, this is child's play. Right? Rav Zechuyos does much more than just save a community from Dever. So the Gemara doesn't tell us what it does, but Rav is major. In other words, his Zechuyos do more. Ela Mishum Ha'ugav V'Dishah Amar V'Zavil HaKvura. There happens to be that there's one person in the community who, whenever there's a burial, so he has a shovel, he has a spade, he lends it out, no problem, meaning a simple act of chesed like that, that's enough zechuyos to protect the community from Dever. As far as Rav is concerned, Rav does much more than that. Bidar Kores, okay, second time today we're mentioning the town of Dar Kores. I think I pronounced it differently this time. So there was a fire in the city of Dar Kores. And meanwhile, in Rav Huna's district, Rav Huna was a student of Rav, so Rav Huna's district, there wasn't the fire. So Savar Mina B'tzchusa de Rav Huna Denafish Yitzchazel Ebechoma. So again, the thinking was Rav Huna, great tzaddik, he protects us with his zechuyos. Ha'izutra le'le Rav Huna Ela Mishum Ha'i'isasa De'mechamem Atanur Mishal Ha'shivavusay. And the Gemara says, no, again, the protection of this district from the fire, Rav Huna's zechuyos is much greater than that. Why? How come the city received Yeshua from the fire? So the Gemara says, because there was a woman in town, she had an oven. When she lit up the oven, right, lighting an oven back then was not just simply the turning of a dial. It was much more labor-intensive. So after she lit her oven, so she invited the other women of the community, come to my house, you can bake in my oven, it's no problem at all. Okay. In other words, again, simple acts of chesed in the community protect the community from any impending danger. They told Rabbi Huda that there are locusts. So he instituted a fast. So the Gemara says, is this such a loss? So Amar Lehu Zavda Aisa Bahadayu. So he says, okay, But did they bring any provisions with them? Meaning these locusts are obviously coming and they're coming to eat. And so therefore we are in danger. Amar Leila Rabbi Yehuda Ika Musna Bechazira. Somebody tells another story. They told Rabbi Yehuda that there's a plague that's infesting the pigs. So Gazer Ta'anisa. So Rabbi Yehuda instituted a fast, meaning a plague of infecting the pigs, killing off the pigs, that's not good. So name a kasaver Rabbi Yehuda makam shalaches mimenech and mishalaches mikol minim. So now the Gemara says, well, what's Rabbi Yehuda's concern? So maybe it's that it'll turn into a pandemic. It'll spread. In other words, so the whatever plague, whatever bacteria, I speak now obviously in more modern terms, but whatever bacteria is affecting the pigs, it must be that Rabbi Yehuda feels that it's going to move from pigs to other animals and et cetera, et cetera. So the Gemara says, Lo shani chazir de danyim mayar levnei inshi. So another Gemara says, no, Rav Huna had another consideration. Pigs are not ruminating animals, right? The noted fact about pigs is that although they have split hooves, but they don't ruminate. So their digestive system is very similar to that of a human being. One stomach, not four. And so what Rav Huna felt is that if this bacteria is affecting the pigs, so their digestive system is not much different than that of humans. And therefore, Rav Huna felt that the same bacteria is going to adversely affect humans if we don't ask for divine intervention. They told Shmuel that there was a plague in the town of Chuzai. So Shmuel instituted a fast. They said to Shmuel, you know, I understand what this is. It seems like you're overreacting. There's a great distance between us and the town of Bechuzai. So Amar Leika Ma'abra, Hacha de Pasikle. So he says, no. He says, there may be a great distance, but there's nothing stopping the impending plague from going from Bechuzai to where we are in Naharda. Right? There was no river stopping. In other words, there needs to be some sort of natural barrier in order for us to say that we don't need a special divine assistance. But being over here that there was no barrier, Shmuel felt that they needed a special divine assistance. The Gemara here now tells another incident where there was a plague in Eretz Yisrael during the days of Rav Nachman. Now Rav Nachman, of course, lived in Bavel. Dazer Tanisa, and so Rav Nachman's response was, we in Bavel are going to fast over the plague in Eretz Yisrael. So Amr in Gevira Loka Shivcha Lo Kol Shekein, and Rav Nachman's argument goes like this. If the Gevira over here is the lady of the house, right, the Bala Sabayas. So if she's getting afflicted, so the Shivcha, the maidservant, needs to worry as well. In the analogy here, obviously, Eretz Yisrael is compared to the Gevirta. She is the Bala Sabayas. Bavel, she's the Shivcha. She's the maidservant. So basically, Eretz Yisrael is in danger, so we in Bavel, lo kol shekin, how much more so? Time of the Gevir b'shivcha, shivcha b'shivcha lo. The Gemara says, now, what it sounds like from the Gemara is that the argument of Rav Nachman is Gevir to b'shivcha, right? The lady of the house, the Balas Abayas, and the Shivcha. And obviously, the Shivcha needs to worry for anything that adversely affects the Gevirta, right? If her lady of the house is in trouble, she's in trouble as well. But it sounds like from the Gemara that if it's Shivcha b'shivcha, right, two different maidservants, one doesn't need to worry about the other. Meaning that if you have a plague in one, the other does not have to worry. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's just go back one story earlier in the Gemara, one incident earlier, where there was death in the town of Bechuzai, and Shmuel, who was living in a different city, said, okay, we need to fast. And the Gemara says, and that's not Gevirta v'Shivcha, that's Shivcha and Shivcha. That's one Babylonian town and another Babylonian town. So the Gemara says, no. The reason why Shmuel was worried over there, meaning the Gemara says, you know what, the argument is fundamentally a good argument. Shivcha v'Shivcha does not need to worry. Meaning if there's a plague in one Jewish community outside of Eretz Yisrael, another Jewish community outside of Eretz Yisrael doesn't need to react. Now again, the Gemara here is not talking about sympathy. The Gemara is not talking about empathy. The Gemara is just simply saying, does another city have to institute a fast, a public fast? The Gemara says fundamentally no. Shmuel was concerned about Bechuzai because there was traffic between the town that he lived in, which I assume is Nahar Dal, and the town of Chuzai. And because there was so much traffic there, so therefore it is easy to forecast how, if there's plague in Bechuzai, easily it's communicable to our city here in Nahar Dal. That's why Shmuel says that we need to declare Tanis Dibur as well. But outside of that, the argument is in fact a valid argument. Shivcha b'shivcha, one does not need to create a Tanis Dibur over the other. Okay. Good, Adkan Piri, that's the end of the Gemara. Really, that's where we should have gone to yesterday. Okay. But anyway, that's the Gemara that deal with the discussion of plagues, what the definition of Dever, the discussion between the two Rav Nachmans, Rav Nachman Yitzchak and Rav Nachman by Rav Chista, and then the ensuing Gemara that discuss whether or not one community has to establish a Tanis Dibur over another community. And what comes out clearly from the Gemara is that if Eretz Yisrael is experiencing a plague, so then all communities outside of Eretz Yisrael, which are considered the Shivcha of Eretz Yisrael is compared to the Gevirta. She is the Bala Sabai, she's the lady of the house. So if she's in trouble, so then all the subsidiary outside communities also consider themselves to be in trouble as well. Okay. We are going to continue. Okay, the Gemara now is that we are going to go deep into Agadata from here until really the remainder of today. No, that's not true. I'm sorry, I take it back. For a good part of today's daf, now we're going to go head deep into Agadata, and we start off with the story of a doctor. Abba Umana. So the Gemara tells a story about Abba Umana. Abba Umana, I'll call him a doctor. The type of the medicine that he practiced was bloodletting. Bloodletting, super popular in the Gemara. Bloodletting comes up time and again, and bloodletting was a therapy of choice. The Gemara speaks about a particular bloodletter. His name was Abba. That was actually his name. Okay. And Hava Asale Shama Minisifta Derekir Kol Yuma. Every day he received a Shama Lechem from heaven. Now, exactly how that works, I don't know, but clearly it means that Kosh Baruch Hu was happy with him. He is he must have done something good. The Gemara is going to go into detail in terms of the good things that he did over his life. Now, contrast that to Abaye, who lived at the same time. So he got visited by Kosh Baruch Hu once a week. Okay, doctor seems to be in good shape, this particular doctor. And the Rabbi Komala Yuma de Kippura. Now, Rabbi only got a visitation from the Kosh Baruch Hu once a year. Okay, so Abaye once a week, Rabbi once a year, doctor every day. Now, Now, everything in life is relative. I need to tell you this. Everything in life is relative. You're always going to have people who are firmer than you and people who are less firm than you. And so as firm as you are, as you think you are, but there's going to be somebody firmer than you, and it has to be. So Abai is looking over to this doctor, and Abai says, I don't understand. Right? In other words, I work hard on my spiritual health. And I get visited from a Kosh Baruch Hu once a week. But meanwhile, there's this doctor, and he's getting visited every day. And the Gemara says that Abai had Chalisha Zas, like he felt bad. Like, what am I not doing? Or, as we'll see in just a moment, the correct way to ask the question is, what is the doctor doing that makes him better than me? So I'm a little much as I'm happy to Uvdei. So they say to Abai, look, as good as you are, you're just not going to make it to his level. You don't do the things that he does. Umay have Uvdei, the Abu Umana. So the Gemara says, okay, now do tell, what does he do? So I'm a little much as, I'm sorry. So the Chiyava Abed Milsa, have Machis Gavalachir Nashilachir. So number one, so whenever in office hours, so he kept men and women separate from one another. Okay, in other words, he made sure that they kept separated from one another. He ensured the tznius even in his practice. Number two, the isa levusha this way by karna to have a bezia ki kuslisa, and he had a gown. I know we can make fun of the gowns that we wear nowadays are not exactly that modest. But he had a gown. It was a modest gown. It had a little opening in it, enough so that he can work. In other words, he can operate. Right? He punctures. I'm not exactly sure where, you know, which vein they go after, but he punctures. And so basically, before the woman goes into his practice, so he puts on this gown, and the only opening that the gown has is where he's going to draw the blood. So when the woman would come in, she would wear this gown, so that he won't look at the woman. Okay, so in other words, again, an extra level of tzniyus that he had in his office. And then the Gemara says, and now let's talk about how he asked for money, for services rendered. So the financial office was off to a side, but it wasn't a financial office, basically a room with a pushka. And basically, the Isle Shadibe, so after somebody was treated in his office, so they would leave and go into the financial office, which again, it was not an office, it was just a room with a pushka. If they had money, they would drop the money in the pushka. And the Leislein law mixed it. And if the person didn't have money, so he wouldn't be embarrassed for the inability to pay. Okay, so basically he operated on the honor system, and anyone who can pay does, and anyone who cannot pay just simply walks out. So now let's say a Talmid Chacham came in for treatment, for bloodletting. So Avri Minei Lo Shakol, not only did he not charge, but Ubasa Dekai, Yav Le Pshita. So, but after services were rendered, so he gave the Talmid Chacham money. Because after bloodletting, you have to eat, you have to drink. And so he says, okay, right, you're young, you're Talmid Chacham, you don't have money. So here, you have to go eat. So he gave him money. Okay, that is a brief description of Abba Umana. So needless to say, he was a tzaddik, and the Gemara was specific in terms of the things that he did in terms of his practice. Okay, so one day, Abaye sent two people to test him out. Okay, now, right, Abaye clearly was fixated on this doctor. he was fixated on this doctor, and he wanted to test him to see, how real is this person. So I know to us it sounds like this person doesn't exist. But Abaye wanted to test it out. So So Lemitrike, Osvino, Vachlinov Ashkino, Omachwahu, Bistaki Balaila. So Abaye took him in and fed him and gave him drink and gave them sheets, wool sheets. Litsafra, now the next morning, Kachin Vashaklino. So what do these guests do who were there just simply to test this doctor? So what they did is they took the wool sheets, right? People go to hotels, so sometimes they help themselves to the towels. Okay, that's called stealing. So that's what these two did. So v'shaklin v'kama v'nafkalu l'shuka. So v'ashkechinhu, and they go to the market. So now they have their freshly stolen wool sheets that they took from the doctor's house, and they go to the market, and they actually come across the doctor himself. So they say to the doctor, do me a favor, could you help us appraise these? Meaning, again, they were doing this simply to test him. So can you appraise this and see how much this is worth? So he gave them an idea of how much it costs. So Amalei v'dilma shavu trei. Okay, but they said, nice, he gave an appraisal. But, like any appraisal, they challenged the appraisal, right? Maybe it's worth a little bit more. So the doctor said, well, it was very easy for me to appraise them considering that's how much I paid for those sheets. So So the guy said to the doctor, not only do these sheets look like your sheets, they actually are your sheets. We actually took them from you. So Amalei b'matusim minach b'machashadatam. So now they said to the doctor, okay, let's discuss this a little bit. Meaning, we stay at your house. We took your wool sheets. You probably realize that. We meet you in the market the next day. We ask you to appraise the sheets that we took from your house, and you didn't really think about it much, and you just gave us a number. Like, what were you thinking? So, So the doctor explains to them, here's what I was thinking. Obviously, you're not stealing sheets from my house, meaning that can't possibly be. Right? In other words, he was down the kafkus. He judged them favorably. So there's no way that they took the sheets out of their house because they were going to steal them, obviously. So it must be that there was a great need for the money. So the example that he came up in his own head is Pidgin Shvuyim. Must be that we have to collect money to help ransom and get somebody out of a dire situation. The ichsifu lememoli, and you were embarrassed to tell me this information. So in other words, so you helped yourself to the sheets because you needed it. You just didn't have the courage to tell me. So amalei hashan ishkalin amar. So okay, so they said unbelievable. In other words, really unbelievable. Meaning he was down the kaps chus, he just assumed that they were taking it for a good reason, and so therefore, basically, okay, so you can let it, you can have it. Now they said, okay, this was all a test. we're good now. We're going to go back to Abaye. We're going to report to Abaye. You are as special as they say you are. Here, just take the sheets back. So Amalahum, let's talk Abaye. So he says, no, once you took the wool sheets away from me, I had hesach hadas, meaning I figured that you needed it for tzedakah. So basically, I experienced yeush. Give it to tzedakah. I don't need them anymore. Okay. Atan. That takes us to the end of the description of this doctor, visited by Kosh Baruch Hu every day. After the Gemara's description, at least we can have some idea in terms of why it is that Kosh Baruch Hu visited him every day. Now we turn to Rava. Now remember, Abaye got visited. Yeah. I'll just say it with full clarity. I don't know what the purpose of Abaye testing him was. Okay. In other words, the fact that he got visited by Kosh Baruch Hu daily, that should be enough information. Sure. Right. Correct. Correct. I don't know. I don't know. Was he justified in doing so? Those are good questions, and I don't have an answer. Okay. Kachalsha daite de Rava mishum de Abaye. So now remember, right? Abaye had chalishas das because of the doctor, and Rava had chalishas das because of Abaye. Abaye got visited every week. Rava got visited once a year. So mishum de Abaye. So I'm sorry. Kachalsha daite de Rava. Mishum de Abaye. Mishum de Abaye. Okay. Amrulei mistayech tika. So they say to Rava, they meaning his students, I guess, say to Rava, look, you're providing protection for the entire city. In your zechus, in your honor, in your merit, so you provide protection for the entire city, so don't feel so bad. Meaning you have good qualities about you as well. Okay, so again, it's just everyone can turn to somebody else and say, like, you know, as good as you're doing, so someone's going to be doing better. And the Gemara gave us an excellent example of that. Avrabrokeh chuzah habishchech b'shuka debei lefet habishchech alel gabei. The Gemara tells another episode, another incident. Avrabrokeh chuzah was in the marketplace of Bei Lefet, name of the place, and he had a conversation with Eliyahu Hanavi. Amalei ikah b'shuka bar alma de'aseh. And he asks Eliyahu Hanavi a really simple question. There's a marketplace, a lot of people around. So let me ask you. Anyone over here at Ben Olam Haba? Right? Anyone here going to go to Olam Haba? So Amalei lo. So Eliyahu Hanavi's answer, quite remarkable, is, man, nobody. Now, just even that part of the exchange is difficult to understand. We have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Yeah, you read my mind. So you have a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that says, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek Olam Haba, everyone has a portion in the world to come. So, difficult to understand, what does he mean by that? Maybe we're talking over here, we're talking some sort of level of Olam Haba.
But Rabbi Yochanan said, even somebody who just walks in Israel,
he gets caught. Yeah, I understood. I'm openly admitting again, but whenever we get to Agadah, it's hard. It's just hard. The questions that are raised are going to be more, you know, are better than the answers that I can provide. Okay. So that part of the exchange is difficult, but fine. So, but we get the basic idea, meaning that Eliyahu Navi says that, look, right, no one here is as good as you think they are. Okay. Adahachi v'achi ha'u chazalu garva da'avisayim v'sani uchmei v'lo ramichuta d'tchilta v'glimei. Now, along walks a guy, walks into the marketplace, a guy who is wearing black shoes and not wearing tzitzis. Now, the idea of black shoes, it comes up a number of times in the Gemara, right? Back then, right? Don't look at my feet right now. Back then, so the practicing Jews did not wear black shoes. Okay, black shoes was a practice of the Goyim, not of the Jews. Okay, I guess things have changed. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what color they were, but they weren't black. So the idea that he was wearing black shoes means that he basically dressed like a non-Jew. And furthermore, he was wearing a four-corner garment, but he didn't have tzitzis on them. Okay, so, in other words, and obviously the point of the story is going to be, don't judge a book by its cover. Okay, that's going to be the obvious point. And basically, Eliyahu Navi points to him and says to him, that's a Ben Olam Haba. Okay, that guy right there. Amalei Haiba Amma de Asehu. He's going to Olam Haba. So Rab Basrei Amalei. So this guy's now running after this guy. Now you understand, this follows right after the story of the doctor. Because again, the idea is that he's a doctor, he's not a bai, he's not a rabba, and meanwhile, he's on a higher level. So this guy over here, who doesn't even look Jewish, he doesn't look like he's practicing Yiddishkeit, so meanwhile, Eliyahu points him out as he's special. Olam Haba. So our Amora of the story, forgive me, I forgot his name, Rav Broka Chuza. So he goes running after this guy. Amalei Mayuvdech, so he says to him, okay, no, tell me, what do you do for a living? So the guy says, look, I can't talk right now. I got to run. You'll come back tomorrow. Maybe you'll see me tomorrow. We'll continue this conversation. So he comes back. The Amora comes back tomorrow and meets him again and says, okay, now, please tell me, what do you do for a living? Amalei Zandukana Ana. I am a jail warden. That is my profession. That's my occupation. And again, what I do is that in prison, I have men and women in prison, and I keep them separate. The men stay on one side, and the women stay on the other side. And my bed, in other words, where I sleep at night, is right in between the men and the women, and basically I create a barrier to ensure that there's no illicit behavior going on. And let's say that there's a Jewish girl who is sent into prison, and I see that the other wardens are looking at her. So what I do is I'm most nefesh. I sacrifice myself. I protect her. I make sure that the wardens don't have their way with her. At one time there was a nara morasa, a young eligible girl, who was. And she was murasa, and she was, I'm sorry, I said eligible, and by eligible I meant ineligible, meaning she was engaged, she was betrothed, and she was sent to jail. By the way, just the idea that there's a prison, and there's right there, in other words, we don't, generally speaking, we don't have incarceration, right? In other words, that's the Torah's form of punishment and penalty and penalizing is that we don't do incarceration. That's not a Jewish idea. There are a couple of Gemaras that speak about jail, but generally speaking, our justice system does not involve a jail, generally speaking. There are times where if we need more facts, so we'll put him and her in jail just simply until we get more facts, but just as a form of punishment, so incarceration is not our way. Okay, so then what is the story here? What's going on over here? It could be a non-Jewish jail, whatever. Whatever. Anyway, there was an Ara Marasa, and she was in jail, and the non-Jewish warrants were looking at her. Shakli derdaya bechamra v'shadilei b'shipula. So what I did is I took red wine and I poured it on the bottom of her skirt. And v'amre distanahi. And they said distana that she's going right now through her menstrual period, and even for them it is it's unattractive for them to have relations with a woman who is currently menstruating. Rashi says, and I'm speaking now to the Persians in this room, Rashi says that the word distana is a Persian word for menstruation. Okay, that's the kind of reaction I was expecting. So, okay. Okay, fine. It's fine. Whenever Rashi says it's a Persian word, I look to you and it never works. So, okay, good. Amalei, my time alei slechuta, v'ramiz v'sani uchme. Okay, good. So in other words, so this warden, okay, so he's most in efforts to save other Jews. Okay, good. That we understand that he's special. But now the Gemara says, okay, now the Amora asks him, okay, but you don't dress Jewish. Meaning you're in the marketplace right now, you're not wearing tzitzis, you're wearing black shoes. Like, you don't look Jewish. Like, what's that? So Amalei, Alina Maafkina, Bein and Achrim. So he says, look, I'm amongst the non-Jews all the time. And Kihefidolo Leida Diudainai. And I don't want them to know that I'm Jewish. I conceal my identity, but for the following reason. So that when there's a gzera, I go and tell the rabbis. And so that they can ask the Kosh Baruch Hu and appeal to Kosh Baruch Hu and annul the decree that's planned by the non-Jews. And yesterday when I tried to engage in conversation with you, you blew me off and you told me come back tomorrow. What was that? So the reason why yesterday is because it just happened to have been that as you called me yesterday, I learned about a gzera that the non-Jews wanted to do against the Jews, and so therefore I was on my way running to the rabbis to tell the rabbis this is what they're planning and this is and you need to strategize. Okay. Good. Again, don't judge a book by its cover. Certainly the point of the story, and this person was special in terms of how he was most in effort to save other Jews in jail, and two, how he disguised himself as a non-Jew, and again, he did so for very altruistic reasons. Okay, now remember, all this was in the context of this Amora being in the marketplace together with Eliyahu Navi and pointing to people who are Ben Olam Haba. So far we've identified one. Two more people walk through the marketplace. Okay, I found two more people who are Bnei Olam Haba. Who are, what do they do? So once again, he runs over to these two and he says, okay, no, you got to tell me. What do you do for a living that you're Bnei Olam Haba? Amalei, in shebeduchi anan, so what do? We are comedians. Professional comedians. And when we see somebody who is sad, we cheer them up. That's what we do for a living. Now, I don't what they do it for a living or that's what they do with their life, but in other words, that's what we do. Inam ki chazina be tried this way, tigra bahadayu, tachin vadin lushama. And whenever we see two people fighting, so we go and we intercede, and we try to make shalom between these two people. Okay? So we make people happy, and we make shalom between two people. And Eliyahu Navi says, as a result of that, these two people gain a special place in an Olam Haba for that behavior. Okay? Let's continue. We're in the Gemara. We're in the middle of Chavez Amad Aleph. At the two dots, Tanarabban and Elom Masrin. Let me just read the heading. Al Elom Masrin B'chol Makam, Tanarabban and Elom Masrin B'chol Makam, Ala Shidafon V'ala Yerakon. The Bryce over here echoing what we learned back in the Mishnah is that if there's a wind blast, if there's Yerakon, some sort of jaundice, Arbe v'chasil, locusts, chayara, or wild animals. So that means that it deserves our immediate attention. We fast, we blow shofar, we cry at Tefesh Baruch Hu. Rabbi Kiva on Elashidafan v'liyakon v'chol shehu. Rabbi Kiva says that when it comes to Shidafan Yerakon, any amount, meaning any wind blast that's affecting the field, that deserves our immediate attention. And when it comes to locusts in Eretz Yisrael, you see but one wing, meaning with just one locust, and that deserves immediate attention with fasting and frying session. Al HaChaya, Tana Rabban, the Gemara quotes another Braitha, Chaya Rasha Amru Bizmanchi Mishulacha. If it's divinely sent, crying out to Hashem. If it's not divinely sent, we don't cry out to Hashem. Obviously, the question is, how do we know? The Bryce over here is going to give us indications. Ezuhi mishulachas, ve'ezi she'ena mishulachas, nearest beer mishulachas, ve'sadena mishulachas. If you see a wild animal in the city, that's divinely sent. If you see it out in the field, that's normal, that's natural. Bayom mishulachas, balayla and mishulachas. You see during the day, that's divinely sent. You see it at night, that's normal, that's natural, doesn't require our fasting. Rasa shnei bnei adam v'rasa sacharei mishulachas. Nichbis menem and mishulachas. They see two people, and they chase after them. That's unusual. That's divine. If they see two people, but then the animals go around in hiding, that's normal. If they lunge after two people, pin down two people, but only eat one of the two people, that's divine. But if they attack two people and they eat the two people, that's normal, meaning they were hungry. And finally, the last indicator is that if they go to the rooftop and they take a child and from the crib, so that is divine. Okay. The Braisa over here, the Gemara is going to spend some time on this Braisa because there are, the Braisa is not totally clear in terms of when it's divine, when it's not divine. For example, the Gemara goes over a number of what seems to be contradictions. The Braisa says that if you see the wild animal in the city, that's divine. And that means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is sending us a message and we need to fast. Okay. But that means then that if you and if you see in the city, it doesn't seem to make a distinction whether you see during the day or during the night. Meaning city is the indicator. But meanwhile, but then we make a distinction between day and night. And I don't quite understand. Meaning if I see in the city, isn't that enough of an indicator, regardless of whether it was day or night? So Lokasha Hafi Kama says, okay, shot in the breaks is like this. If I see a wild animal in the city during the day, that's unusual. That's divine. We need to fast. If I see a wild animal at night in the city, okay. So at night they feel more comfortable. In other words, that's not totally unusual. That's not divine. Inami beside that field b'yom and mishalachas. Now out in the field, where that's their home turf, so you see a wild animal over there in the field. At any point in time, that's not unusual, doesn't require us to fast. Skip the parentheses. The Gemara points out what seems to be another contradiction. On one hand, the Braisa says that when the animals see a human and they chase the human, so that's unusual. That's divine. We need to fast. Meanwhile, if they see a human and they run and they hide, so that's normal. But there's a middle area which the Braisa is not dealing with, which is what if the animal does neither? Neither chase nor run and hide. But what if the animal just stands? Where is that? So Lokasha Kambisada Smukhala Agam, Kambisada Shana Smukhala Agam. So the Gemara says, well, it depends. If the field is next to a swamp, so a swamp is where the animal can run and can hide and no problem at all. So in other words, the animal feels right now pretty secure because even though he sees you, and even though the animal has a natural fear of you, but there's a swamp right nearby, so if he doesn't run and hide right away, it's understandable. However, if there's no swamp nearby, and it's just out in the field, and the animal sees you, and the animal doesn't run into hiding, that's unusual, and that requires fasting. The Gemara says, look, I don't quite understand. If the animal pins down two people and eats one, that's divine, but pins down two people and eats two people, that's normal. Meanwhile, the Braisa just a moment ago says he just chases after a person, and that's divine. So the Gemara says that this is talking about in a swamp. And in a swamp, the swamp is a home turf of the animal, and so therefore he'll feel more at home and more secure in the swamp. He'll chase after the humans in the swamp. So therefore, in the swamp, he chases you. That's normal. In the city, he chases you. That's abnormal. That deserves immediate attention. The Gemara says that if the animal goes up on the roof and snatches a baby from the crib, and that's unusual, and that means that we have to start fasting immediately. And the Gemara's response to that is, okay, that's obvious. So the Gemara says, Rashi explains, we're not talking about a house, we're talking about a hut in the field. A hut in the field is basically animals' home turf. Animal is really not going to be that reluctant to go and snatch a baby from the crib. So I could have argued that that's not so unusual. The Gemara says no. Even though it's a hut on the field, the animal to go into the crib and take a baby from the crib, that's unusual. and requires our immediate attention. Al ha-cherev. Let's do a little bit more. This morning, Tanu Rabban ha-cherev she'amor, ina sarak lamar, cherev she'ina sar shalom, ela afilu cherev she'shalom, she'in lecha cherev she'shalom, yoser mi'par nechal. The Gemara says, look, if there is sword in the land, meaning if there's an army coming in, if it's an invading army, if it's enemies, clearly that deserves our immediate attention. We need to fast. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is even an army of peace. The Gemara gives us a historical example, and that's Par Nechal. Par Nechal, who lives during the period of Yoshiyahu. Par Nechal wants to go through Eretz Yisrael, right, Egypt to the south, southwest of Israel, wants to go through Eretz Yisrael in order to evade Assyria. And so Par Nechal says to Yoshiyahu, we're coming in, we're invading, but we're not invading you. We're just passing through. That's also cherev. That also requires Tanit Sibur. Now, as long as the Gemara brought up the historical event of Par Nechal and Yoshiyahu, so the Gemara says Yoshiyahu made a mistake, a terrible mistake, a deadly mistake. Shenamar, let's just go through this episode. We're on the top of Chav Beis Amud Beis. I should read it better. Elohim amar levahaleni chadalach me'elohim asher imi. Va'al yashchi secha. So the Gemara over here quotes the pesukim from Divrei Hayamim, and basically Par Nechal says, I'm going through. I'm not invading in Eretz Yisrael. I'm just going through Eretz Yisrael. Allow me passage. My God told me that it's going to be successful. So my Elohim, Asheri Mi, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Zur Avodah Zarah. He was referencing, and that's why I read it wrong and correctly. I read it Elohim. It should be Elohim. He was lowercase g. He was referring to his idolatry. Amar, so Yoshio says, look, Par Nechal wants to go through Eretz Yisrael, and again, he wants passage through. You know what? I'm not going to let him. And he thought Par Nechal is not going to be successful because he's counting on his idols and nothing to worry about. He's relying on his Avodah Zarah. I will be successful. Yoshiyahu was not successful. Yoshiyahu put an army together, stood up against Par Nechal, and lost to Par Nechal. And furthermore, Yoshiyahu in battle was killed. Arrows were fired away at him, and the Gemara says, in a graphic nature, Mikey Achilas Ma'od, Amabir Amarab, Mamishasa Kogufo Kikavra. His body looked like a sieve. He was pierced with so many arrows. Amar Shmuel ben Nachmini, Amar Rabbi Yonasan ibn Manana Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu was obviously punished, and what did he do wrong? Yoshiyahu was a good king. So what did he do wrong? So he should have asked Yirmiyahu at the time what to do. He should have consulted with the Navi of his generation. He didn't consult with the Navi. So my darish v'cherv lo tavor b'artzachem. And now he thought, look, the prophet says, no sword is going to pass through your land. So my cherev, the land of cherev shen shor shalom b'aksib nesat yishalom b'aretz. In other words, and it's not talking about an attacking army coming into Eretz Yisrael, because it already tells us that we're going to have shalom in the land. It means even an army that's just passing through. The Torah promises that that's not going to happen. So, and the mistake of Yoshiyahu, King Yoshiyahu, is that he didn't realize that he may be a worthy king, but the people were not worthy. And so therefore, even though the Torah promises that there wasn't going to be an army passing through, but he felt, no. What he didn't realize is that his generation was not worthy of that bracha mentioned in the Torah. Now, as he's dying, so Yirmiyahu sees that his lips are fluttering. So Agasare. And he's dying, and he's dying a painful death, a gruesome death. And Yirmiyahu was worried that he was saying things that were blasphemous because of the pain that he was going through. Gachem v'shamed ikamastik ala edina. And Yirmiyah goes over to the king Yoshiyahu as he was dying and approaches closely to him and hears that what is Yoshiyahu saying? Tzidek ha-din. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is right. Mastik ala edina nafshei. Amar. Tzadik Hashem kipiu marisi. I went against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the tzadik. Pasach ala ushay teruach apenu Mashiach Hashem. And Yirmiyahu's response, the Gemara here quotes Pesukim in Echa. Echa is authored by Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu's response is Ruach Apeinu Mashiach Hashem. Right? He's the anointed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was the king, and he's a righteous king. Even though this is how he died, but even in his death, he realized HaKadosh Baruch Hu was right, and he realized that he was wrong. Okay, stop over here. Pick it up tomorrow from the Tzedakah.